Stu Does America.
Well, welcome to the program. Lots to get to tonight. Jill Savage is here to talk Caitlin Clark and racism in sports. Steve Baker joins to preview his new explosive expose. We'll get to all that in a minute. We're going to start by doing the return of Christine Blasey Ford. Ah, we all were looking for this one, weren't we? Well, she's got a new book out, boys and girls, and I'm sure you're going to be reading it. It's called One Way Back, a memoir of this person you don't know for any other reason than she accused somebody of rape with no evidence. Christine Blasey Ford is all over the media right now doing her tour. From The View to CBS, media give Christine Blasey Ford even more time to smear Brett Kavanaugh. And this happened pretty much everywhere. Let's start with The View. Here she is. I mean, just listen to the framing of some of this stuff. And we'll go through some of the details here in a second. Watch.
Yes. Well, you've been called a highly credible witness.
Oh, by who?
And you have a PhD in psychology.
Oh,
you're
gosh.
A professor. You teach at Palo Alto
here.
And Stanford universities. But even today, some people remain skeptical of your story.
Mm-hmm.
And you write that during the hearing, Senator Lindsey Graham wouldn't even make eye contact with you. Were you prepared for that kind of response?
All right. So, I mean, you get the framing of this stuff. Like, were you prepared for people being so mean to you? How about Joy Behar on The View? Listen to her getting angry at the audience.
I just was wondering, those letters that you got,
mm-hmm.
what was the percentage of men writing to you?
So there were probably 10% men. So we had bins called mail, and so that's where we would
10%.
Put the mail.
See, yeah. See, what men need to understand is that they have to step up and help us.
Mm-hmm.
We can't
yes.
do this ourselves. I noticed that a lot, I watched while people were clapping. Some of the men did not clap
mm-hmm.
in this audience.
Mm-hmm. And as many as 1 in 3 women will face sexual assault. So
yes.
You're not by any means alone in this.
How come you're not clapping? I don't know. Could it possibly be they don't believe this one individual woman? Or were they just, you know, lazy and probably not paying attention because their wife dragged them to The View? And that also could be a possibility. The Washington Post is on this bandwagon. Again, after Kavanaugh, Christine Blasey Ford tells the rest of her story. And the framing of this is just infuriating. If you know anything about anything, which, of course, is, you know, these media organizations are depending on you not knowing anything about anything. Washington Post writes, a reader is looking to One Way Back for a magic bullet to prove Kavanaugh's guilt or innocence are out of luck. Ford doesn't remember anything more than she's already publicly recalled. There are no new witnesses or unearthed diary entries. What she gives instead is a thoughtful exploration of what it feels like, feelings, boys and girls, to become a main character in a major American reckoning. A woman tossed out to sea and learning that the water is shark infested, or at the very least, blooming with red tide. I mean, just stop searching your thesaurus, okay? It's just goes on and on and on like this. Let me give you a bit more. If you believe Ford in 2018, One Way Back will give you a deeper appreciation for the woman behind the headlines. If you didn't, well, I don't know if the book will change your mind, but it might wiggle your mind a bit because it's impossible to picture why someone would lie to achieve the kind of fame that has been bestowed upon Ford. It's hard enough to picture why someone would put themselves through the nightmare to tell the truth. Well, couple things. Number one, look at the media attention she is getting here. She's about to make a bunch of money on this book, of course, as well. And the media attention has been glowingly positive, with the exception of conservative media. 99% of the media that's liberal or mainstream or in the middle or leaning right even, a lot of that's been glowing. But yes, the right media has been occasionally critical, mainly because of the other reason why you would put yourself through this type of fame. I don't know. You're really liberal and want to stop a conservative Supreme Court justice in a massive change in the Supreme Court? I mean, it was vital for them to come up with something to try to stop Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation. And they found it in her. That was it. I mean, you can say you believe her, and maybe you do. That's fine. It's your prerogative to believe her if you wish. But of course, you're just bending the laws of physics to do so. We're going to go through more of that here in a second. From time to time, Washington Post says, Blasey Ford writes, people still asked her whether she thought she ruined Kavanaugh's life. And she reacted with incredulity. I can never say that word. Despite the fact that Brett ultimately got the job, despite the fact that he sits on the Supreme Court while I still receive death threats. And that is wrong. It is actually, of course, very wrong to give a death threat to anyone. And that's why it's been so disturbing that, you know, Kavanaugh never received any death threats. Oh, wait, California man indicted for allegedly attempting to assassinate Brett Kavanaugh in his home. Yeah, actually, people, it wasn't a death threat. He didn't get a nasty email. He had a guy with a gun a couple blocks away, ready to kill him. A slightly different story than the nasty emails I'm sure Christine Blasey Ford did receive. And that's not right. We don't like nasty emails. We shouldn't treat people that way, even if she is completely lying to upend our constitutional republic. We shouldn't be mean on emails. Death threats are not right, obviously. But, like, I don't know. I think Kavanaugh maybe got a little piece of this as well. Do you think so? Do you think Brett Kavanaugh gets death threats via email and letters? I think so. I'm pretty sure. Of course, we have The Atlantic to go down that road as well. Christine Blasey Ford testifies again. See, her releasing her book is just another piece of oppression in her life, where she has to tell this story again via her book contract. Kavanaugh spoke after Ford, and the gulf between the two testimonies was, in retrospect, an omen. She offered evidence. He offered grievance. She spoke science. He spoke politics. She was piecing together fragments of a story, parts of which she had forgotten. He was controlling the narrative. Now, this got community noted by Twitter/X. Ford made unverified allegations. She did not offer any other evidence. Her testimony cannot be accurately described as science. She also identified witnesses, but none of them corroborated her claims. Is that a problem? Is that a problem to this narrative? They want you to forget the narrative, of course. And I came in and I was like, you know what we need to do? We need to put together a list of all the problems of her testimony and her story from back in the day, because people don't remember this anymore. We need like a list of like 10 or 20 things where, you know, we can show and remind people so they don't just get won over by this nonsense. And then we started doing the research on that and realized that Molly Hemingway had already done it. So it was in The Federalist, 21 Reasons Not to Believe Christine Blasey Ford's Claims About Justice Kavanaugh. Let me go through these because this will give you a little bit of a reminder as to where we were. Number one, there is no evidence that Ford and Kavanaugh ever met. Not that she had been raped by him, but that they had ever met. That is a remember the framing by The Atlantic. She spoke evidence. He just made all sorts of accusations and spoke grievance. Evidence? Where? Where was this evidence? Leland Kaiser, who is a friend of Blasey Ford, said she did not have any confidence in her friend's story. Friends pressured Kaiser to change her story. Doesn't normally happen when you're trying to tell the truth about a trial. All alleged witnesses strongly disputed the claim. But, you know, that's just all of the witnesses. And in case you were thinking, well, she probably came up with some since all of that happened, right? Didn't she come up with some of the witnesses? Well, half a decade later, Christine Blasey Ford still has no corroborating witnesses. Oh, but wait, there's more. Ford's father supported Kavanaugh's confirmation. Now, of course, he could just be a conservative and he just liked a conservative Supreme Court justice. But if you believed a really great conservative, the best in the whole wide world, raped your daughter, would you support his confirmation? My guess is no. That's just the patriarchy, though. The literal patriarchy. We're talking about an actual father. Ford doesn't know the location. You know, if you're going to convict someone of a rape multiple decades later, perhaps knowing the location would be a nice place to start. I know this happened at this place. She didn't know that. She also doesn't know how she arrived at the location. Okay, all right. But she at least knows how she got home, right? No, she doesn't know how she got home either. She also doesn't know the date or even what time of the week. She also doesn't know anything about this trial, including, with the exception of one thing, she remembers she had one beer. So the one thing that she can remember is the amount of beverage she had at the party. One beer, that's it. Of course, the one thing that would make her look like a total victim in this case, that's the thing she remembers. She only had one beer. She only had one beer. Does this add up to anybody with an actual brain? Kavanaugh's contemporaneous calendars support his claim. Again, we found the calendars of Kavanaugh from back in the day, and he wasn't even there at the time. Of course, we don't know the exact time, so it was kind of hard to narrow that down, but there's no evidence whatsoever that he even went to this party. Ford changed the date of the incident by years from her initial stories. Just a few years. I mean, it's the most important thing that ever happened to you. Of course, you're just going to miss it by a few years. September 11th, 1996, right? We all remember that date in history. Character witnesses from the time support Kavanaugh. Now, of course, that's not definitive, but with all this other stuff, it does make a difference. Ford's first mention of Kavanaugh's name is 2012, after he became a national figure. Number 15 is false claims were made about Ford's inability to fly. This is one of those things where they invited her to testify. She was like, oh, I can't do that. I can't get there by that date. I'm scared of flying. And then all this evidence came out that she flies all the time. Why would she be lying about this? Ford scrubbed her social media, so no one knows what she was writing, although her friends said she was incredibly a crazy liberal, is what they called her. Ford said she wanted to stay confidential, but her first call was to the Washington Post, which, by the way, just gave her another glowing story. What a surprise. Ford's attorney admitted a motive of desiring an asterisk by Kavanaugh's name. Of course, this was the motivation. We all know this was the motivation to try to take out Kavanaugh, to create some doubt, to maybe get this pushed down the road a little bit longer. Maybe they have to go to a more moderate person. And by the way, Kavanaugh's not even my first choice for a Supreme Court justice, but that's another story. Ford has benefited politically, financially, and socially. We all know the politics advantage here. You're trying to take out Kavanaugh, and you're certainly besmirching a conservative's opinion. But, I mean, look, she's now elevated in society. People know who she is. And you could say, well, why would she want that attention, as the one story I noted mentioned? Well, victimhood in this society is the ultimate kingpin. You are the king or queen of the world when you're a victim. It is now the goal of our society to become a victim. That's the type of attention our society wants. It's not achieving anything anymore. It's now just becoming a victim, being oppressed. Nothing in Kavanaugh's past remotely similar to the claim for 37 years and memory manipulation, which is the nicest, honestly, the nicest piece of that entire article, which basically says, you know, sometimes people just remember their stories wrong. And it's possible that's what happened here, though I don't believe it. I don't believe that's actually what occurred here. It's possible she just has some memory that has been created over the years because she thought conservatives were such boogeymen that they were raping all women, and she somehow fused that with her own memory. I don't buy that at all. I believe she lied to try to get Kavanaugh tossed. That's what I believe. I don't even think it was about fame. I don't think it was about personal gain. I think it was about politics. I think someone who believes that strongly, that conservatives are evil, you go to any lengths to try to upend something like this. They needed someone to do this, and they found their person. Don't believe these stories. Don't let yourself forget what we all went through a few years ago. Jill Savage is going to join us next. Whether you have 3 minutes in the morning or 30 minutes in the morning, you can do something good for your skin with the best in skincare, GenuCell. Introducing Gen 90, it's the new wrinkle treatment. This is an instant wrinkle treatment from GenuCell. And Gen 90 instantly reduces the appearance of wrinkles anywhere you use it around your eyes, the forehead, the crow's feet, the laugh lines, even the chin. Gen 90 technology is luxurious, paraben-free, silky smooth, and best of all, it starts working like right away. And now you can get GenuCell XV, the collagen builder moisturizer with vitamin C and hyaluronic acid in a pure natural base for stunning results day after day. Gen 90 and XV are on sale now. The GenuCell Spring Sale is going on. It's included in their bestseller package along with GenuCell's under-eye bags and puffiness serum. Like everybody in my family loves this stuff. It's Gen 90. You can see your fine lines and wrinkles disappear wherever they are. And before before you even leave the room a lot of times, order right now, GenuCell.com/Stu. GenuCell.com/Stu. Get a free spa box with two luxury skincare essentials included, plus free shipping. It's GenuCell.com/Stu. GenuCell.com/Stu. I'm happy to welcome Jill Savage back to the program. She's a contributor right here on Blaze TV, which makes it very convenient. She's on Blaze TV right now. Jill, how's it going?
It is going very well. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I had to bring you on because you're the only person around here that I can talk about Caitlin Clark with, because I'm totally into the Caitlin Clark thing. I love watching her play, And I have never, ever been interested in women's basketball for even 10 seconds previously to Caitlin Clark. So I never thought I'd be in a position to say I actually care more about the women's tournament than the men's tournament this year.
Amen. I do as well. Caitlin Clark is my favorite subject. We actually talked about her last year. You had me on the show. So this is the second time. And I feel so excited because I am an Iowa Hawkeye grad. Iowa basketball was the first thing that I ever loved in my life. So can you imagine? It's pulling you, a non-women's basketball fan,
totally
into the game. I was born into this. Like, this is it for me. So this is so exciting. So I am very happy to be here.
This is your life coming full circle right now. It is interesting because, I mean, as like a high school kid, like, I was addicted to the NCAA tournament. Loved March Madness. Is all I thought about. Over the years, it's just drifted completely out of my purview. Like, I can't name you five men's basketball players. If I was going to talk about any player, it's going to be Caitlin Clark, because just watching her highlights, really enjoying watching her play. It's not a, oh, well, finally, the, you know, women are empowered, or finally, you know, it's just, she's just a great player, and I like watching it.
She plays a great style of basketball.
Yes.
That is what has drawn people in. It's not that she's a female. It's not all these other extra things that are going on. It's, she can flat out play.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why people care. And actually, here in Blaze headquarters today, I was the one who made sure that the NCAA tournament was on the TV. So I just want everybody to know I'm at least trying to bring it in.
Well, you are, you know, Glenn Beck started this company, who knows absolutely nothing about sports. So, I mean, the bar is low here, let's put it that way. But it's fascinating to watch this because, like, I'm not the only one here, right? This is, she's sort of taken the country by storm and is really, like, honestly, like, taking over every sports narrative right now outside of, like, maybe the three major men's sports. Is it just that she's just a great player? Like, why? I mean, there's been other players that hit a lot of threes. There's been other players who've been really, I mean, Diana Taurasi was a great player. But, like, for whatever reason, this has just caught America's attention.
I will go back to our interview last year when they had made it to the national championship game. And like you, a lot of people caught on to the bandwagon of Caitlin Clark as they made it through, right? The Final Four, the national championship. A lot of people on Twitter, Magic Johnson, Patrick Mahomes, all of these big name players, and then those in, you know, basketball currently in the NBA, everybody was talking about Caitlin. So then this offseason happens, the buildup continued in the offseason. To start the very beginning back in October, they had a non-conference or a offseason game in the football stadium where they sold 55,000 tickets.
Wow.
So it's the largest audience ever for a women's basketball game. That's how they started the year, right? Yeah. Like, no bigger game has ever been played. And this one didn't even count. It just built from there, because then Caitlin started chasing all of the records. And Iowa was thrown into, you know, the top five to start the season, and all the expectations of, can they do this again? Can they be this great team? And then Caitlin Clark not only surpassed Kelsey Plum for the women's NCAA all-time scoring record, but she passed Pete Maravich's record, which has lasted forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, had the nickname of Ponytail Pete because they play such similar styles. There's edits out there of, like, Pete Maravich would do one thing, and then it would be Caitlin Clark doing
see that.
It now.
I can see that
and
comparison.
And it's stuff like that that has made it just bigger than one person, one team. In the ratings this year, every game that Iowa basketball is on, they have six different networks that they have now set ratings records for women's basketball.
It's crazy.
4.5 million people are watching, like, their senior day and the Big Ten tournament. Nolan Ryan, paid $7,000 for five tickets, reportedly, for her senior day.
Wow.
Right? Like, so sports royalty is like, I need to know what's going on
all
here.
Right. Give me, like, 1 minute on whether, like, they're going to win every game by 50 points, because that's all I know is her.
Yeah.
But, like, realistically, what are their prospects here?
So they're the number one seed in the NCAA tournament, but they're the second best one seed, right?
There are
four one seeds. Which would mean, in normal years, that they would have the second easiest path to the national championship.
Right.
That's not the case this year, Stu. they threw a two seed UCLA and they're a three seed in LSU because they want that rivalry matchup to come back around. All the fun topics that we had with Angel Reese
LSU really
and Caitlin
badly.
Clark last year.
No offense to LSU. I know, again, their college is fine. but they were really annoying after that game.
So basically what I'm saying is they've loaded the region that Iowa is in, and every media pundit is saying it. They're like, I'm sorry, was Iowa like the second best team or like the fourth best one seed? Because they didn't do them any favors.
Let me go to take us out of the sports world kind of a little bit here and go to the race world, because for whatever reason, these two are always tied together, but I want them to be separate. An article by Lizney Schnell, this is of USA Today. She says, women's basketball needs faces of the future to be black. And then she mentions a couple of players. Why do we need the faces to be particular colors? Is that a real thing?
Well, Lindsay herself is white, so okay. I don't.
So she can't be the face.
Yeah,
she
so knows it's not her, but she grew up playing basketball and was a huge women's basketball fan as well. But when you get to the heart of that article, it's like, well, Caitlin Clark's a white girl, so Like, we need the next players that are going to come along to be black. That's like saying with baseball, right? Like, baseball was all white for quite some time. So is it important that Jackie Robinson came along, or should we have just left it as it was? Like, the history of baseball for some people's lives was just all white. No, it's better now. Because it's inclusive. Because it's just the best people, merit-based, go out and get the jobs. I don't understand why we have this divide. And I understand, like, hey, Cheryl Miller, Cynthia Cooper, the history of women's basketball. I understand that there are a lot of black females that paved the way to get to where we are today. That's great. That's always going to be a part of the story. But Juju Watson is one of the freshmen at USC, and she has surpassed what Caitlin Clark scored her freshman season. Great. And they're all like, oh, this is so good for basketball because she's now going to come along and break Caitlin's record. Well, she's a freshman. Let's hold off a little. You have a long ways to go. You have to stay healthy, and let's not get ahead of ourselves. But is it important that she has to be the face of college basketball, right? Like,
no, it shouldn't be about that, right? As you point out, it should be merit. That's what's great about sports. It takes everything else out, supposedly.
Breonna Stewart was the face of college basketball for women for a while. She won 4 national championships. Nobody said anything at that point in time. It's Caitlin Clark is coming along, and she's just a small town girl from Iowa. And this just doesn't fit that narrative, right? That it's just a little different. It's approachable. It's endearing. Everybody can kind of relate to it. But it's not good enough.
It never is. Let me give you another example of this. Take it over to baseball, where I can talk a little bit more, substantially. Jazz Chisholm, who's with the Marlins, he had a cool quote, and this was. I wanted to talk about how it was presented here in a second, but let me just play this for you. This is him talking about an experience he had previously as he was coming up in the league.
Because if I was sleeping or anything, nobody would even blink twice. They'll let me sleep through a whole game. You know what I mean? Like, bro, because it's happened. Yeah. It ain't like this is, I'm telling you, bro, our team captain, when I was younger, came in, saw me sleeping before the game, like an hour before the game, and like he knew we had a team meeting. Let me stay there and slept through the team meeting. Dang. And the coach came and woke me up 15 minutes before the game. The team captain.
Yeah.
Come on, bro. How is that a team captain?
Yeah.
That's not a team captain, bro.
Yeah.
So that's why I say now, I know if I'm sleeping, Tim, hey, bro, come on, brother, we got to go. Anybody in the clubhouse would do that.
Yeah.
Like, even up to Sandy, to the Spanish boys, to the white boys, to the black, it don't matter who it is. Our clubhouse now is so together. It's like, bro, we don't even see color in that clubhouse.
Man.
There's not a color in that clubhouse. From the top to the bottom, there's not a color in that clubhouse.
I mean, we'll take out the fact that you probably should make sure you are responsible for getting up for your own games. But taking that part out, we don't see color in the clubhouse. This was the goal for all of society for as long as anyone can remember. Apparently, Jazz Chisholm didn't get the memo that now colorblindness is not the goal. It's actually racist. I mean, I love this, and I think we have to make sure we're telling people, don't let anyone deny that this is the goal. This is the goal, and it remains the goal.
I feel like he's going to get in so much trouble for this, right? Like, we can't have nice things. We can't just all get along. People want segregated schools and stuff. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, we fought so hard to get out of this, and now you were saying, oh, I think that we would just study better if we were in our own classroom.
Right.
I'm like, no, we had what everybody wanted. And now in their locker room, it's great because it's there again. And I just know, Stu, I just know somebody is going to come along and say, you can't say this. We can't have this.
Yeah.
You need to understand your place in this. And your white teammates are probably suppressing you and holding you down in some way, right? You just don't know it. It's, you can't even see the oppression. That's how bad it is. You're so badly oppressed.
Right. We are, by the way, issuing a pre-cancellation alert for Jazz Chisholm. He needs to know he will get canceled if he keeps saying like stuff like this. And I will point out that The Athletic, which is no conservative source by any means, this is how they promoted that clip. They said Marlins Jazz Chisholm Jr. Described a toxic clubhouse culture in which he was hazed by established veterans. Like, how do you get, like, yes, that he mentioned he wasn't woken up, which I don't think is the same as hazing. But also, like, we have like 30 seconds here. But this is just like, what's great about that is him saying they had solved any of that dumb racial stuff. We've taken liberal Twitter out of the world, and this is what it looks like.
Well, Eric Adams will go through and say, oh, you can't speak up. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. They're going to come after you. Mm-hmm. We've already seen it in the real world. And it will come for the sports world because it always does.
It always does. Jill Savage, contributor to Blaze TV. Thanks so much for coming on the show. And final four party for Caitlin Clark. Is we doing this here at the Blaze?
Everybody's on. Listen, if we can have that, I am so doing it. Right. Maybe I'll put it together. But everybody should get on the Iowa bandwagon now because it is an entertaining product.
It is a lot of fun. Jill, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, I've only got like 2 minutes here, so I got 1, 2, 3, 4 stories I'm going to try to get to. So I'm going to go as fast as I can. Donald Trump leads Joe Biden in 4 key battleground states, according to polls. Again, it's still early, but these polls continually are favoring Donald Trump. He is ahead right now. Like I was talking to somebody the other day. They're like, what do you think the election will be? And I like, you know, again, I still think it's going to be close. I still think there's a good chance that Joe Biden wins, unfortunately. But I will say if the election were held today, I'd be pretty confident that Trump would win. I don't know, 65-35, something like that, that Trump would actually win. The polls are still close in some of these states. You never know what's going to go on with these, you know, individual, you know, situations. Of course, you always have to have that asterisk. But right now he's ahead, 51-47 in Georgia. He's also ahead in North Carolina, Nevada. North Carolina, let's see, it's 51-48. Nevada, it's 44-41. These are all very close, though. I mean, let's be honest about it. Anything can happen in these states. And, of course, as we've seen in the past, may happen in some of these states. Trump has hit new poll highs with black and Hispanic voters. What to make of it? Panic! That's what to make of it. That's what to make of it on the left, at least. They are terrified of this. No Republican presidential candidate in the past 50 years has approached receiving 20% of the black vote since Republicans took 18% in 1972 and 16% in 1976. According to exit polls, they haven't taken more than 12% of black voters since then. Their average share over the past 50 years is 9%, which is about half of where Trump currently sits in the polls. He's made a lot of progress there. And one of the reasons, this is one of the reasons rumored, at least in part of the NBC News analysis of the story, that Trump is eyeing Marco Rubio as a potential VP pick. Obviously, the evil white person thing can't be necessarily pushed on Marco Rubio as easily as some of the other candidates. But they talk about Elise Stefanik, Ben Carson, and Tim Scott are also among the mix. We told you Vivek Ramaswamy is apparently out of the mix right now. We talked to Marco Rubio this morning on radio about this. He said he has not talked to anyone related to Donald Trump or anyone related to the campaign about being a vice presidential pick, but left the door very much open in case they happen to reach out. And who knows if someone around him has talked to the Trump campaign. Finally, I'll give you this. Biden cancels $6 billion in student loan. More 78,000 public service workers this time. I'll save you my constitutional analysis of this, which I've given so many times it makes me sick. But has there ever been a more transparent attempt just to buy voters than what this guy is trying to do? This is all he's doing. He's just buying voters all over the place. It is unconstitutional and despicable. Now, it would be great if anytime you needed medication in a hurry, you could just go and get it from the pharmacy. You know how it's always been. But unfortunately, the vast majority of our medicine we take in the United States is manufactured in China. So when drug shortages appear, and they do appear, They're the ones handling it. China is, not us. They're on our list of adversarial states. This is not a good thing. You want the ability to take care of your family's health. You don't want China to have that ability. This is why you need the Jace case. It's a personalized emergency kit that contains five essential antibiotics that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. And Jace is continually working to expand their medication offerings. They've even added ivermectin as an option in the Jace case. So if your horse needs to be dewormed, you could do that immediately. The Jace case has basically everything you need to personalize itself. And of course, you know, it's not just you. It can be family members. It can be loved ones, whoever it is. During anything that's unexpected, the Jace case can be there for you. JaceMedical.com. Use the code STU at checkout for a discount on your order. The promo code is STU at JaceMedical.com. J-A-S-E Medical.com. Way too much stuff to get to today, but I wanted to make sure we got Steve Baker on because you know him. He's an investigative journalist, Blaze Media contributor. His new article out on The Blaze that is an absolute must read. It is Favoritism, Cover-ups, Reveal Culture of Corruption in U.S. Capitol Police Leadership. I'll tweet a link out to it here in just a second. Steve, thanks for coming back.
Hey, Stu, it's good to be back.
A lot going on with you, as usual. There's never a dull moment in the life of Steve.
I'm either
Baker.
In trouble or creating trouble.
Yes, so. That is true. Mm-hmm. But the creating one is good. We like that you create trouble. We don't want you in trouble. We like you creating trouble. And you are creating trouble for the Capitol Police here and their leadership. For people who haven't seen the story yet, kind of give the elevator pitch so they can go read the entire thing because it's got lots of detail in there. But give them a basic idea.
Yeah, it really comes down to just corruption in government. Yet again, it's like surprise, surprise, except that this time it's with the agency or the department that's in charge of protecting ostensibly the most powerful people in our country, which is Congress, you know, senators and representatives that are the representatives of the people, and what they're able to get by with that we can only look. It doesn't take a lot to conjecture and to understand the power that they have and that they accumulate by knowing what they know. They're the personal bodyguards of Congress members. And then when you get into the upper echelons, particularly with those special agents and those other officers assigned to what's called the Dignitary Protection Detail, they know everything. They know the individual peccadilloes of every congressman that they provide security for. They are with them 24 hours a day. They are with them when they travel overseas. They know what they do. They know who they're sleeping with. They know what other, you know, bad habits they might have. And so they have a tremendous, inordinate amount of power as a result of the knowledge they have of the behaviors of congressmen.
And, you know, you expect that to be true. It's part of their job to have that knowledge in a way, but it's the part also part of their job not to use it for anything. We don't know if it was used, but we do have a very strange series of events and strange patterns of behavior revolving a lot of these people.
And that's where we have to ask the questions, is why are people involved with this particular Dignitary Protection Detail? Why are they able to get by with murder? Not literally, but you know what I'm saying, is they get by with a lot of offenses. What the Capitol Police themselves call terminable offenses. In other words, things they should have been fired for doing, and then they do it again and again and again. And rather than inhibiting their climb up the ranking and the ladder of, you know, of their employment with the Capitol Police, it almost seems to accelerate that. And in fact, our sources, both named, unnamed, at the Capitol Police, they say that. They tell us that, in fact, it is almost it's kind of a background talking point that they chatter amongst themselves to say, well, you know, this guy is he's untouchable, or this guy is Teflon John or Teflon Sean, and that it seems that the more bad they do, the faster they climb in rank.
Can you give us a little bit of the of what we know about their pasts here? Because I know you go through some of this, and it's like, this seemingly would have been a big problem for anyone else that had these offenses on the record.
This particular story only focuses on three primary characters. The two most significant are a guy by the name of Officer John Erickson. And John Erickson, he has a rather sordid history in terms of his disciplinary reports with the Capitol Police. Going back to 97, when he was on the dignitary protection detail for Newt Gingrich, then Speaker Newt Gingrich, he was on an advanced team in San Antonio, Texas, and he was found by the San Antonio police passed out at 3:30 in the morning in his Capitol Police rented vehicle, completely, you know, sloshed, intoxicated, blood alcohol way, way over the limit, and he was arrested. He refused breathalyzer, and when he got back home, he got a slap on the wrist, and he's back on the job again. 5 years later, he was driving intoxicated in his home, near his home in Maryland, and slammed into the back of a Maryland State Trooper's car, injuring the trooper. And then
it's usually a problem, Steve.
It's usually a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
And then 10 years later, lo and behold, he becomes involved in a conspiracy to defraud the Capitol Police in a payroll overtime scheme where they were submitting false hours, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, what they call a backfilling scheme of their overtime hours. And as a result of that, he was again put in a position to where the actual investigating officers and a source that was very close to that investigation that we have told us that not only should he have been terminated for this particular event or this particular crime that he was committing, but it was a crime. And then, in fact, they should have referred it to the Department of Justice because what he was doing was a felony. And it should have been, he should have been criminally prosecuted, not just fired. But lo and behold, this past October 23, he was promoted to deputy chief of the Capitol Police.
It's a fascinating career path there. I guess I can totally get hammered and pass out in a car. I could do that, and maybe I'll get promoted. I don't know. Maybe I'll get a whole new gig.
Can you do that at Blaze?
I think so.
Oh,
well,
awesome.
I am a person who hosts the Power Hour every once in a while. So, yes, you probably can do it at the Blaze. But the point is, like, you know, that one is, it's not a crime to pass out in your own car as long as you're not driving it. It's a different standard if you're protecting the most, you know, powerful people in the world.
Right.
Like, you normally do not get a free pass on any of these things, let alone, you know, stealing from your own employer.
And he was involved with, in this particular backfilling of overtime pay scheme, with the man who is now the number two guy at Capitol Police, Assistant Chief Sean Gallagher, also promoted to that position this past October. And Sean Gallagher was actually the ringleader of that particular scheme back in, it started back in, I think, 2012, 2013. And not only was Gallagher the ringleader of this, literally stealing money from the Capitol Police, you know, the government itself, but he was also participating in forgery. He was forging his supervisor's signature in different colored ink pens to hide his trail during the process of this scheme that went on for over a year.
You were telling me a little bit off the air that this is not the end of this trail and not the end of these types of stories. What can you tell us about another story coming out? Is it tomorrow?
Yeah, as you know, the story we put out yesterday has nothing to do with January 6th. It's just corruption in the police.
Yep.
But had it not been for January 6th, I wouldn't have gotten on this trail, because our previous story about special agent, dignitary protection detail, of Nancy Pelosi's detail, as a matter of fact, Agent Lazarus, who we discovered perjured himself in the Oath Keepers
trial. Video evidence.
Oh, video evidence, we have him nailed. Well, we now know, I should say, Blaze Media has known for about 8 months now that there was more to this story. We've just not been able to release it. And I am at least allowed at the moment to tell your audience, you're getting another one.
Nice, I love these
choices. Is that, in fact, there were previous disciplinary actions taken against Lazarus. He should never have been on the force. He should have been terminated back in 2016, and that, which means he would not have been at January 6th, which means he would not have been able to testify in that trial and perjure himself. More importantly, because the disciplinary report has been buried and hidden, that information was never given to the defense team so that they could impeach his testimony, and it's been hidden. And we also now have a direct connection to the Department of Justice in an additional cover-up, because they opened an investigation into Lazarus on my story, after my story in October of last year. They opened it a month later in November, then buried it, and there was intervention from the Department of Justice in that investigation.
So it's so
stay
shady.
Tuned tomorrow morning. We'll have the full story.
Yeah, go to Steve's media or social media accounts or theblaze.com. One of the reasons this is important is not just because we want to show corruption in the government, although that's always worthwhile. It's also because these people are actually responsible for protecting our representatives, right? Like, even if you don't like Nancy Pelosi, I do want people who are competent doing her security. Like, yeah. We're in a crazy time, and it's not just, it's Republicans, it's Democrats. The fact that there's been a real degradation of the security around our elected officials.
You know, I said something, it wasn't on your show, I think it was on Sarah's show. And this was months ago when we were talking about the Lazarus and the Harry Dunn stories and that sort of thing. And I made the statement on the show. I said, is this really the kind of people we want protecting our leaders? And she was like, oh, of course not. You know, and then I got a call from one of my sources at the Capitol Police the next day after he saw the show. He said, Steve, that's exactly the kind of people they want protecting them.
That's terrifying.
Yes.
Terrifying. Oh, they want people that they can control.
That's right.
Right. Before we go, you also were recently interviewed by Tucker Carlson. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't know what you've been your vibe on this, because I feel like this story's been a big story. Obviously, we've talked about it. You know, Glenn's talked about it. A lot of people at The Blaze have. There's been some outside conservative media interest. Yeah. I was really glad to see Tucker take this on.
Yeah.
But I don't think, you know, I would have liked more conservative media interest. And I also would have liked mainstream media interest. Any progress on that front?
Yeah. Well, first of all, the overriding and most significant feedback I've gotten on the Tucker interest, you know, because we did talk about my case and my arrest, that sort of thing, was most people thought Tucker was gobsmacked. There was they had never seen him so speechless.
Jeez.
I think because of what he's been involved in the last year, especially, he's just wondering when they're going to come for him.
Yep.
I think he really believes that.
Worthwhile concern on Tucker's behalf.
Absolutely. And then as far as major media, we've had a couple of negative stories on me as a result of that, but we also are beginning to see some breakthrough, too. Roll Call did an incredibly fair story on it, and now wants me to have me on one of their shows. So, The Hill. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, so The Hill. So I was like, wow, okay.
That's good. It's good to hear.
And so there's little cracks starting to show there, because I think they have to be concerned themselves. Is, you know, not only do pendulum swing, you know, back and forth politically, but I think they have to understand that even if the pendulum continues its swing to the hard left, to the tyrannical left even, is that the first thing the tyrannical left does, if you've read a history book, is they clear their own house. They clear out the factions of the factions. If you're not exactly 100% aligned with them at the time that they start clearing house, you get the axe as well, or you get the gulag.
Well, check out the Tucker Carlson interview as well. And don't forget Blaze Media's piece tomorrow coming from Steve Baker. He gave you the preview. That's all we can tell you for now, but make sure you go and read it. And plus, read his past story, Favoritism, Cover-ups, Reveal Culture of Corruption in the U.S. Capitol Police Leadership. Steve, thanks so much for coming on. Thanks for all the hard
thanks,
work you're
Steve.
Doing. Joe Biden is an elderly man with a poor memory. You know that. I know that. Now America knows it. And you can wear it right now at StuDoesMerch.com. It's our Joe Biden elderly man with a poor memory t-shirt and mug line. You can use the code STU10 if you'd like to save 10% off your order. Get prepared for the election to mock all your liberal friends with the new Joe Biden line. We'd appreciate it. So much going on next week. We've got great shows lined up for you. We will see you on Monday.